How many of you are worried about where your next meal is going to come from? Now, I don't mean where you're going to eat, what restaurant you're going to eat at, but whether or not you're going to have a meal at all. Probably not very many of us. How many of you are worried about whether or not you're going to have clothes to wear? Most of us are worrying about whether we can fit in the clothes that we own, not about whether we have clothes to wear. If anything, our closets probably have clothing in them that needs to be given away that we've kept for years, thinking, one of these days, I'm going to get back into that. You see, we don't worry about those things. We've been blessed by God so that we have an abundance of things. And yet, having said that, all of us still have a tendency to worry about money, don't we? Those of us that don't have enough worry about how we can obtain more. Those of us who have plenty worry about how do I hold on to what I've got. We're constantly worrying about those things. Well, prior to what we have had read for us just a moment ago by Robert, in these verses, if you back up to what we were looking at last week, you find that Jesus warned about money, the tendency to worry about money, and the danger of greed. As a matter of fact, one of the things he said there is this. He says, not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. Our life is not about what we own, the things we possess. Jesus' desire for us, for his disciples in those days, for us today, is that we be a people who, as we follow him, we are not worried over our money, what we have. He wants us to know that our Father cares for us. Our Father is concerned about what we have, and he is watching over us, and he's going to make sure that we have those things that we need in life. He's going to provide for us. And so in our reading today, what Jesus does is he speaks to his disciples about the futility of worrying over the basic necessities of life, what he calls food and clothing here. And he gives us a bit of instruction. His advice is what we ran into in the very first verse, there in verse 22. Do not worry, he says, about your life as to what you eat or your body as to what you will put on. So in our text, what Jesus does as we work through this, we'll see this, is number one, he gives us some reasons as to why we shouldn't worry. And then we'll see that he tells us in place of worrying what we should be doing. And then finally, as we conclude all of this, there's a principle that he lays down that is about our hearts and what we need to think about where our heart is concerned. So let's jump right in and let's look at what he says about how we are concerned about things and why he tells us that we shouldn't be, why we shouldn't worry about those. The first thing that he lets us know is, listen, your life is more important than food and clothing. There are things of life that are far more important than that. He puts it simply like that. He says, for the life is more than food and the body is more than clothing. But here's an interesting point that our English translations don't bring out. If you'll notice there in verses 22 and 23, the word life is used by our Lord. Here's what you may not know. That word is translated out of the same Greek word as the word soul that is used up in verses 19 and 20. You remember what that rich farmer said, that rich fool as God called him? He says, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. And what does God come back and say? Thou fool, this night your soul shall be required of you. The word soul comes from the same Greek word, is translated out of the same Greek word as the word life. So what are we to learn from that? What Jesus is doing is he's saying, listen, the lesson that I taught about the fool, it's about you. It's about your life. And food and clothing and shelter are indispensable needs that all of us have, that we must have. We must have a roof over our heads to protect us from the elements. the heat, the cold. We need clothes upon us because God clothed the first man and woman as a result of their sin, and it's been that way ever since. We have to have food to survive. And when Jesus tells us not to worry about things, he's not saying you shouldn't plan to meet your needs. No. We still plan to meet our needs, but what he's saying is don't be overly concerned, don't have undue concern upon those things, because life is about more than a good meal or a new set of clothes. First thing. Then he tells us something else, and that is that God places a high value upon you. But in saying that, he uses birds. There in verse 24, he says, "Consider the ravens, for they neither sow nor reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them." You know, ravens and their little brothers, the crows, are found in every country around the world. They were in Jesus' day, they are today. And yet they are scavengers, as many of you may realize. And because of that, the Old Testament law that God gave said that they were unclean. So a person could not eat from them, a person was to stay away from them because it would render that individual unclean. But here's the point that Jesus is making. Unlike the farmer, these ravens, he says, they don't sow. You don't see a raven out tilling the soil to plant seed. You don't see a raven out getting in a crop. He says they don't have storehouses or storerooms. They don't have barns that you see them putting it away in. He says they're not like the farmer in that way. They are totally dependent upon God's provision. And what is it that Jesus said? God feeds them. God takes care of their needs. So what's the point? If God cares for something as insignificant to you as a raven, something you consider a nuisance, don't you think he's going to take care of you? He's going to be concerned about your well-being. Now, what Jesus is not saying is that we just do not work at all. We just sit back and wait for God just to drop it in our lap, and then we just thank you and we go on our merry way. No. There are plenty of scriptures that talk about the ideal of good, hard work, setting aside. If you look at Proverbs chapter 6, there in verses 6 through 8, Solomon said, "Go look at an ant. Observe the ant, you sluggard." And at the end of that, in verse 8, he tells us what the ant does, that she prepares her food in the summer and her provision in the harvest. So God's not saying, or Jesus is not saying, just sit back and don't do anything. You know, he's saying we still need to provide for ourselves. But what he is saying is that you and I are far more valuable than birds. And if God is going to take care of these birds, then God is going to take care of you. So don't worry. He then tells us something else about worry. Very simple. He said, your worry is futile. It's futile. It doesn't accomplish anything. The way he puts it is this: which one of you by worrying can add a single hour to his lifespan? How many of you can say, no, I'm going to live 1 hour beyond however long the doctor says I'm going to live. I'm going to live for X number of years beyond what the doctor says I'm going to live. I've decided that. I'm going to make it happen. I mean, we can eat right. We can do all of these things, but we cannot control the time of our death. We cannot deal with that. So what Jesus is saying is that none of us, by thinking about it, can add an hour to our lives. We cannot change that reality. And if anything, all that worry and anxiety does is to shorten that life, and it devastates what part of that life is remaining. What do you do when you worry? Are you a person who stops eating? Are you a person who paces? Are you a person who wrings their hands? Are you, you can go on and on with all of the little things that we tend to do when we worry about things. We hold it inside. We dwell upon it. We don't talk to anybody. I ran across something this past week that I thought was very interesting about what we worry about. Did you know that it's estimated that 40% of the things that we worry about never happen? 40% of what you worry about is never going to happen. 30% of what you and I worry about are things that are in the past that we can't go back and change. We can't do anything at all about it. 12% of what you and I worry about are needless worries that have to do with our health. Well, maybe I ought to do this. Maybe I ought to do that. Well, what about this? Well, what if this happens? Things that we cannot control. 10% of our worries are petty, miscellaneous worries. Just something to worry about. Only 8% of the things that we worry about are things that are legitimate issues. 8%. Less than 1/10 of the things that you and I worry about are things that we really should be worrying about. So what is Jesus saying? If you or I, nor I, can change such a little thing as adding an hour to our life, if we can't do that, why do we worry about these other things that we cannot control either? He's saying, your worry accomplishes nothing. Stop worrying. The last thing he says about why we should not worry has another illustration in it, but the basic point is, when you worry, it indicates something about you. That is, that you're lacking in faith. But Jesus uses a field. He says, if you notice there in verse 27, consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. But I tell you that not even Solomon in all his glory clothed himself like one of these. He said, look at these things. Perhaps you at some point in time have been driving down a road and just noticed on the roadside beautiful wildflowers growing there. The lilies, there are different names that have been used trying to determine what he's speaking about, but basically it's wildflowers. Or maybe you've looked in a field and you've just noticed on a hillside a beautiful, just lit up that field. And the point that Jesus is making is that these ornaments, if you will, in this field have no concern or worry. They neither toil nor spin. He said, but God is the one that clothes that field. And he says that Solomon in all his glory was never clothed like that. But then he makes a point. He says they're alive today, but tomorrow they will be used by some woman in her little oven in Jesus' day, that clay oven, to bake a meal for a family. Alive today, tomorrow cast into the furnace, cast into the oven. Not here. So what's the point? If God so clothes that field in that way, will he not much more see to our needs? Look at what he says there in verse 28. That if he clothes the grass which is alive today and tomorrow is cast in the oven, how much more will he clothe you? And then he adds this, O you of little faith, or you men of little faith. When we worry, we reveal the smallness of our own faith. Because in reality, what we're doing, all of our worry stems from a lack of faith in God. What we're really saying when we worry is that we're doubting that God really cares for us. Does God really care for me? Let me share with you a passage from the book of Romans. Paul, there in Romans chapter 8, verse 32, had this to say. I think it's very interesting because of the way he puts it. He says, he talks about do not worry, because when we worry, he tells us what's going to happen. He tells us that God has given his Son. He did not withhold his only Son, but gave him up freely, gave him up for us. And he said, will he not freely give you all things? Which brings us back to what Jesus says here, right at the end of this little segment. He says, do not seek what you will eat. I've kind of jumped ahead of something, but I want to go back to this. There in verse 29 and 30, He says, do not seek what you will eat and what you will drink. Do not keep worrying. For all these things nations of the world eagerly seek. But your Father knows that you need these things. So what is he saying? Two things I want to draw from that. One in verse, the end of verse 29, the other in the end of verse 30. End of verse 29, he says, do not keep worrying. Stop. Why? Because God knows you need these things. And if God knows you need these things, Jesus' point is God's going to see that you have these things that you need. So what is the lesson he's trying to teach with all of this? He's told us to stop worrying. He's told us why it's futile for us to worry. And now he tells us what we need to do. And that is that we need to stop worrying and we need to seek God's kingdom. Or as you see here before us, the way he puts it, he says, but seek his kingdom. And then he tells us what will happen. And these things will be added to you. If you look in Matthew chapter 6, verse 33, you remember it probably better from that passage because it's on another occasion, Sermon on the Mount, Jesus said, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. The things of which Jesus is telling us to seek are not the luxuries of life. He's telling us it's the necessity, or the things that Jesus tells us God will provide are not the luxuries, it's the necessities that we have. But there's something that we need to be seeking as God's people. We need to seek his kingdom. We need to seek his glory. We need to seek his reign. As we do that, then what we are doing is we are defining our purpose as disciples of Jesus Christ. Our lives are given to doing his will. When we make God's way our primary goal in life, in the seeking of God's way, our primary goal, then all of the things that the world seeks, what Jesus says are the necessities, food, clothing, shelter, God says, or Jesus says, God is going to provide. And God will give us something far greater. What is it? He will give us his kingdom. Look at what he says. Do not be afraid. And look at what he calls us, little flock. He's the great shepherd. We are the sheep. He says, don't be afraid. Just as a shepherd protects his sheep, just as the great shepherd of Psalm 23 provides for the needs of the sheep, so that David could say, I shall not want. Now Jesus says, do not be afraid, little flock. Why? Because the Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. And there again, coming back to Romans chapter 8, verse 32, if God did not withhold his only Son, but freely gave him up for us all, will he not with him also give us freely all things? He's going to give to us what we need. So what do? We seek first his kingdom, and then all of this that we already have, all of this that God has blessed us with, folks, we are living really, some of us may say, oh, you don't know me, I don't live in luxury, but we do. We live in luxury. We know that there are people in countries distant from us that worry every day, where's the next meal coming from? How am I going to sustain my family? How am I going to keep my children from dying from starvation? And what he says to us is that we should be generous. We should be a people who are ready to share. Here's the way he put it. Sell your possessions, give to charity. Make yourselves money belts which do not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief comes near nor moth it destroys. Now Jesus is not telling us literally just go out today and sell everything you have and just give it all away. No, it's what we call hyperbole, and Jesus did a lot of that because we understand that because of different passages in Scripture where we see some of God's faithful individuals who were wealthy. You just start walking through Scripture. Abraham was wealthy. Isaac, Jacob were all wealthy. Job was wealthy. He was the greatest man in all the East, the book says. And yet God considered him a righteous man, one who eschewed evil, feared God. We find not only that, David was wealthy. David put aside a huge amount for the building of the temple when it finally was done under Solomon. Solomon was wealthy beyond wealthy, but it was God's blessing. You come to the New Testament. I believe that Lydia was wealthy. She hosted the church in her house. She was a seller of purple fabric. And then Philemon, whose slave ran away from him, probably a very wealthy individual. Church also met in his house. So there are wealthy individuals. Instead, what Jesus is saying to us is that we need to keep a loose grip on our possessions. We need to be a people who are ready to share what we have with others, to use our possessions to help those who are in need. Our money, our homes, our possessions, our luxuries, our time, our lives, all of these things are to be committed to Christ. What I have is yours. I want to lay it at your feet to be used as it needs to be used for those that you see will need it. And then what he says that we're doing by doing that is that we are taking and we have an unfailing treasure in heaven. We have these money belts that do not wear out because they have within them that which is eternal. But as I said, there's a principle that Jesus lays down at the end of all of this. It's the principle that should direct our lives in everything that we do. It's what he says in this very last verse, verse 34. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Our heart and our treasure always goes together. You can't separate one from the other. Our heart, the center of our being, is where our valuables, where our energies, where our time, all the things that we value the most are to be found. So the question that I have for you this morning as we conclude this lesson is a very simple question, but it's a very important question. It's this: where is your heart? Where is your heart? Is your heart in your house? Is it in the land that you possess right now? Is your heart wrapped up in your business or your bank account? Is your heart in your hobbies or your jewelry or your other possessions that you hold dear? Where is your heart? Or is your heart in heaven? Have you, as Paul said, set your mind on things above where Christ is, seated at the right hand of God? Is your heart wrapped up in this body of Christians so that you're concerned about their well-being and what's going on with each one of us? Is your heart focused upon the lost of this community? And do you pray for them on a regular basis? Is your heart concerned about the missions of this church, the people throughout the world who need to hear the gospel? Where's your heart? If your heart is in the first things that I mentioned, there are always going to be worries that are going to wear you out. They're going to take their toll on your life. Do I have enough? Do I need more? How do I hold on to what I've got? If your heart's in heaven, if your heart is set upon the things of God, if your heart's in the people that God cares about, you're not going to worry because you know that God is caring for you. I like the song we sometimes sing, I don't know about tomorrow. It says, I don't worry about the future. And the reason? Because God holds the future in His hands. God holds your future in His hands. He really does. But you determine that future. If you keep worrying about the things of this world, it's going to take you away from Him. It's going to lead you further away because Satan wants you to do that. But if you're focused upon the things of God, it's going to draw you ever closer to Him. This morning, if your heart is not where it needs to be, if it's not focused upon the Savior, if it's not wrapped up in the things of God, change that. Make the decision today. No longer will I let the things of this world be the focus of my life. Today, my Lord becomes the center part of my life. If you're not a Christian today, you can become one, and God invites you to become one. You have to believe that Jesus is who He professed to be. He is the only way to God. He is the sole means of your salvation. But you have to be willing to turn away from the things that have kept you away from God, and you have to be willing to confess that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and to be buried with Him in baptism so that He can wash away those sins and you can begin a life that is committed to living for Him, a life that does not hold on to this world that perishes with using, but holds on to that which is eternal. What about it? Do you need to come to Him in obedient faith? If so, why not do so right now?